What is going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of The Bog right here on Dave Martell channel, which you should like, subscribe, share, and click the little alert button, the little bell up in the corner, so you get alert every time we go live here on The Bog, which is every single Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern. You know, we got a really great show tonight, guys. You know, we're going to talk about Frith, and we're going to talk about luck. Two metaphysical principles that are absolutely pivotal in our faith and in understanding the Germanic spiritual worldview in the Germanic tradition. We're going to get into that, and it's going to be really, really fascinating and really, really foundational as far as understanding and developing your philosophies and stuff like that. But also, we have at halftime, we have a special word, a recipe from our boy, the Folkish Farmer, our Neurona Society colleague and good buddy. And we're going to play that for you, and you guys are really, really going to like it. He's going to show us how to make bone broth. Yeah, you know, I can't wait. That sounds delicious. But before we get started, before we dig in, like always, I'm going to shout out to Miss Hannah, traditionalapothecary.bigcartel.com. Stop giving your money to the multinational globalist vampires that hate your guts and try to destroy you. Give your money to somebody that loves you. Man, the stuff that you go to the store and you get, that you get off the shelf, it's full of plastics, synthetics, chemicals, weird stuff, trashes your hair, trashes your body, trashes your skin. Man, we're all opting out, man. We're getting into eating better, you know, hunting, gardening, fishing. We're getting into all these things that make our bodies and our spirits and all the, I mean, that make us whole and healthier and happier. Do it with your cosmetics as well, man. Our ancestors gifted us with so many wonderful, beautiful features. We owe it to them. We owe it to ourselves. So go to traditionalapothecary.bigcartel.com. Get some beard oil. I really love the 556. Get some lotion. Man, get some conditioner, whatever you want. It's great Yule gift. Let me tell you, for your wife or your mom or something, they're absolutely going to love it. I love it. My wife loves it. My mom loves it. Dr. G loves it. So Folkish Farmer loves it, man. Everybody's going nuts about Traditional Apothecary. So traditionalapothecary.bigcartel.com. Promo code Dave to get 10% off. Link is in the comments. But let's jump right into it. How are we doing tonight, Mr. Tristan?
I'm doing just great, Dave. How about you?
I'm doing awesome. Oh, yeah, real quick, I just wanted to give a shout out to my kinsman, brother Brandon. He made this mead. I just want to show this to you guys real quick. I know I've been showing off his mead. Man, Guy My Kindred is like the best mead maker on the planet. He's absolutely tremendous. And he made this mead here. It's a recipe that's used with ingredients found that were scraped out of a barrel that was found in an old, I believe he said it was a burial mound in Denmark. So this is like an ancient recipe. We don't know how old this is. And it's made with like barley and like all kinds of crazy stuff. And it's just absolutely delicious. You know, everybody's got to have a mead maker in their kindred or their clan. My mead maker is absolutely tremendous. He's awesome. So I just wanted to give him a shout out and show you guys what I'm drinking tonight. You know, so hail to brother Brandon. But tell us about Frith, Tristan.
Right, let's get right into that. Frith is one of those concepts that everyone thinks they really have a good understanding. Everyone in the As a True movement talks about Frith all the time. I have Frith with you, you have Frith with me, we all have Frith together. But the general definition most people learn it as really isn't that correct. Most people would translate Frith as just the term peace, but that's not really a great translation. Sure. It should be translated more like the unbreakable bonds of loyalty and love that one bears a kinsman. It's not simply the absence of, or it's not really the opposite of war. It's the absence of struggle itself. The notion that we are so connected that between us can exist no struggle. It's not really peace in the modern understanding of it. It has to do with duty and obligation and sworn loyalties and almost a feudal understanding of hierarchies and how different society connects to each other.
And this translates to it in its most simple form, which I would say is like etiquette. I mean, like, here's something when we first, like, you know, revert to the ancestral tradition, to the Germanic tradition, and we accept a lot of these philosophies and these principles and stuff. Some of them you got to chew on for a while to try to like clean your mind of the modern disease and garbage that gets built up in there that kind of perverts and distorts our worldview. But you know, this is one principle that kind of like just falls into place. It makes perfect sense. Frith And it is putting it into simplistic practice is essentially etiquette. And if you look at it from the way Tristan's describing it is absolutely the definition of it and the true understanding of it. But to the practical, pragmatic way of looking at it in today's society in 2019 is really just the etiquette that you need to put forth in order to avoid unnecessary feuding between you know, groups or individuals. And it's something that it really strikes home. You know what I mean? If you spend any time in the Osatru community, you will eventually hear somebody being guilted with, well, is that in Frith? Are you speaking in Frith? Are you acting in Frith? And right away they recoil and they're like, yeah, I don't know. And they rethink what they're doing. At least they should anyways. Sometimes they don't, which is, you know, people. But as a whole, for the most part, you're going to see, like, sometimes people get hot-headed or they get into an argument with somebody. Somebody says, hey, guys, this is not in Frith. And everybody chills out. Because this is like an inherent principle that really just falls into place and makes sense. Would you agree with me, Mr. Tristan?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I would actually like to tie it into one of the concepts you talk about a lot is, you know, the anti-individualist ethos that, you know, we talk about on the program quite frequently.
Yeah.
Our ancestors didn't believe themselves to be real individuals in the sense we do in the modern time. They conceptualized themselves first as belonging to a family and a tribe and a community before anything else. And that's part of what goes into the understanding of Frith is that we are, as let's say, a kindred. We are a singular unit. You know, we have one beating heart. We're a single being. And so we can't fight amongst ourselves. We all want what is best for the community.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And this is, you know, speaking of things you have to chew on, the individualist garbage is something you have to chew on for a while, and you really have to clean yourself of the idea of individualism, because we are conditioned for like how many generations now? I can't even tell you. Actually, probably not even that many. Probably started with the baby boomers, really bad, and then it's gone on from there. The people before that had some of it, but they were still very tribal. You know what I mean, like our grandfathers, great grandfathers, and stuff like that. If you're, you know, my age, like an older millennial or Gen X or whatever, our grandparents and great grandparents still had that very tribal thing about them. But you know, individualism really started to take root with the baby boomers, and it just kind of got worse from there. And we're like the first generation to say, "Hold up, you know, this is not right. This doesn't make sense. This is destroying society." And you know, Tristan's absolutely right about how wanting to maintain Frith is something that comes natural when you accept the your collective identity, your tribal identity, and your tribal loyalties as well. Because let's face it here, especially out here in internet space, you know, I've run into people that, like, I've gone into, like, chats or, like, you know, whatever, like, little forums or whatever, just, like, share my stuff or whatever. And there were people there that absolutely hated my guts that I've never even heard of before. And they hated me because I had, like, a disagreement with, a e-celeb that they like. You know, so it's like the first thing, and you see it when in real life, too, out here in, you know, the meat space or whatever you want to call it. You know, people don't like each other because they did something that they bad to somebody that they know. You know, I mean, that guy screwed over my brother. Or that guy screwed over my cousin or my buddy Tom or my buddy George. Or you know, that guy you know, messed around with my buddy's girlfriend so many years ago. And it becomes like a very tribal thing. Feuds become a very tribal thing. So when you implement Frith, what you're doing so much isn't necessarily preventing a fist fight with you and the other guy. What you're doing is preventing the tribal-wide feud between your tribe and those loyal to you and their tribe and theirs loyal to them, because having an unnecessary feud over words is bad for business. Feuds are reserved for great disrespect, you know, economic competition, business, whatever, you know, what have you. It's not for just exchanging words, and that's what the Frith, at least in the pragmatic modern sense of it being used, is useful for.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would say that really you can't have the absence of Frith in a situation in which everyone is part of the same community. Like, we all share the same values, we have the same goals. That alone is enough to tie us together with the sacral bands of Frith. Once you get out of that sort of community, you start getting into areas where Frith doesn't apply, like, you know, random people, different, you know, different ideologies about life and reality, that sort of thing. But it's always good in the modern day to remember that, you know, just to stop when you say the word, everyone remembers, you know, we're all in it together.
Yeah, we're all in it together. And being part of this faith also comes with a an air of etiquette. There's a certain amount of etiquette that you put forth when interacting with other Sedians or Asatruer or heathens or whatever you want to call them, or Odinists, you know, and whatever you guys identify as. But there's a certain amount of etiquette that goes along with it, and like Tristan said, it's not necessarily about just peace. It's not like this like humanist hippy dippy, oh, peace and harmony, like everybody one love. It's not like that at all. These are the things that we do. This is how we behave to make sure we don't murder each other. Yeah.
Right. It's the recognition that we have obligations to one another socially.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's something, man. Let me tell you, we talk about this a lot in Neurona Society about the modernist throwaway culture. And this is a big problem, you know, throwaway culture. People will literally just, you said something I don't like, we're not friends anymore. You know what I mean? Like, you didn't return my call, we're not friends anymore. Oh, he said something I like, unsubscribe, unlike, I hate that guy now. People just throw each other away. And really, it's a result of, you know, the technology and post-industrial society, and we can get into all that stuff. But the result is this kind of like throwaway culture, and that is, you know, that doesn't have Frith in it. You know what I mean? That's not of Frith, and it's not of the Germanic worldview. And the Germanic worldview, when you're sworn to somebody, when you're sworn to a community, you guys are in it. You guys are fam now. That goes. You guys are going to the grave and beyond together. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's real important to remember in the faith itself. When we talk about Frith, it's not just a social obligation that people invented because we like it or something. It's actually very sacred. The ties of Frith exist metaphysically, and to break them is actually to do a disservice to your soul and your connection to other people's souls.
Yeah, that's another thing to remember as well. You know, in modern humanist Western secular garbage society in the wolf age, people believe that they are just these autonomous meat machines because that's what we've been told since at least, you know. Yeah, it's really something that came out of the Enlightenment era, this idea of autonomous meat machines. When in fact our ancestors and many other cultures today that still hold a, you know, this Indo-European view, understand that, you know, you and those that you're related to and those that you do business with and those people that you associate with, you are spiritually tied to them, and you're not just spiritually tied to them now. You know, it's not like you put the phone down and like they're gone forever. You're going to see them in the next life. You know, and then you're
all right.
Reborn.
That goes to the patrilineal reincarnation. I mean, it's going to be forever.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So before we go off talking about the techno demons of the wolf age and, you know, individualism, hyper-individualism and all that garbage, I want to get on to, you have here in the show notes about the concentric circles of obligation, and this is really fascinating stuff. Tell us a little bit about this.
Right. So one of the most difficult to intuit systems in our faith is exactly how our ancestors reckoned out kinship. The modern idea of how we do it isn't really the same way that our ancestors had an idea of how they were related to one another. Now, when you think about it, and when you actually process it, it comes very naturally to us. We understand the concept, but we just do it slightly different. So I have here a quote from The Culture of the Teutons by Wilhelm Grönbeck, talking about the Gulating Laws. And I'll quote here, "The most thoroughgoing attempt to enter the kinsmen into a comprehensive system was made in Norway. Its rules for the payment of vergild, the Gulating's law, arranges the participants into three groups of men, each of whom has to pay or receive one of the principal rings. But to these ringmen are added three classes of other kinsmen who are called receivers of Namamen, because they can lay claim to certain additional fees. In the first group of receivers are gathered such as a father's brother, a brother's son, a mother's father, or a daughter's son. And in the second group is composed of a brother's daughter's son, a mother's brother, a sister's son, and cousin through the father's sister and mother's brother. And finally, in the third group, we meet the mother's sister's son, a cousin's son, a father's cousin, a mother's brother's and sister's daughter's son. We can see from these lines of kinship here that these are obviously people who are related to you by blood and by marriage, yes? But it's arranged in such a circle, like the trees of a, or like the rings along the trees of a tree, if you cut it open,
sure.
That the way they position people was in groups of how closely you are related to them. For instance, it says in the first group, it is like your father's brother. That is your uncle, of course, right? Mm-hmm. Well, that's your first degree kin. This would be someone that our ancestors considered is effectively just as closely related to you as your father or your mother. These people are so closely related that any crime against you or disrespect is so immediately felt by them that they must act. They must receive payment.
Yeah. And speaking of uncles, like in the Germanic culture, the ancient Germanic culture, the uncle was actually a pretty sacred position. You know what I mean? Uncles would take the kids out and, you know, teach them stuff. They're almost like a second dad.
Yeah, it's almost exactly like being a second dad, actually. Yeah. I mean, they're just so closely related to you that our ancestors almost had a hard time determining the difference.
Yeah, and this is going to sound a little bit weird to those of us in today's society, but in ancient times, if it wasn't uncommon that if a father or husband died, if the brother was unmarried, that the wife would go to him and he would marry his brother's widow.
Right, and take in the children and raise them as his own.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, that just preserves, it was their duty to preserve the bonds of kinship.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of sort of sounds weird to us, but when you think about it, it's really not that weird. Yeah, I mean, because, you know, say, you know, you and your brother, say you pass away, unfortunately, and then your brother marries your wife and takes over for your kid. You know, your brother looks a lot like you. He talks like you. He knows a lot of the same stuff. He's probably going to raise the kids in a very similar way. And if they have kids, then those kids are going to be as closely related as possible. There's nobody else that could, you know, have kids that are going to be as. It kind of like eliminates the idea of having stepbrothers. You know what I mean? Like the horrible situation that we all read about where you know, somebody gets adopted and they get a stepdad and their stepdad hates them and loves his own kids and the families just don't really mesh together. In this system, when the brother marries the widow, it's like, you know, it's none of that's there. At least you'd think it wouldn't.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very practical system meant to deal with some harsh realities that our ancestors had all the time.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. And you know what? There's people around today that like if their significant other, their husband or whatever, especially with women, it happens a lot with women. If their significant other passes away, they'll go and they'll get with the guy's brother. You know what I mean? And yeah, they'll marry them. It's not as obviously back then it was a very common practice, but you know, today it still happens. You know what I mean? It's really not that weird if you think about it. At first, it's like striking because we have this very modern secular worldview, but when you think about it like that, you think about it in a spiritual sense, it's really not that strange.
Well, you know, I think even in the modern sense, most people's main issue is that it would be like dishonoring their memory, right? But of course, I mean, they're going to have to go in some other relationship anyway. I mean, wouldn't you want them to stay in the family?
Yeah, exactly. You know, I guess it kind of like has the air of being like incestuous or something like that, but it's really not. It's truly not.
Right. I would agree with that, actually.
Yeah. So before we move on to luck, I mean, we're already 22 minutes in, but before we move on to luck, what is something, what are kind of like the applications of Frith? How can people that are maybe new to this faith or maybe not part of this faith that really would like to bring on a lot of the philosophies and principles that we have, how could they implement Frith in their life? And what does it look like, and what does it mean in today's society?
Well, of course, one of the most prominent applications of Frith is that in our modern society, we don't always agree with our immediate family amongst a great many topics, politics, religion, social beliefs, anything like that. When we look at Frith, we can note that these people are inherently our kinsmen. And because of that, we can't simply just cut them off, tell them to do whatever they want, never talk to them again. This would be against Frith. Because of Frith, we must try to constantly bring them into the circle to help that our souls would sort of change their minds, as almost like a metaphysical power to it, to keep bringing them into the circle and improve their conduct just by our very presence.
Yeah. We have a question in the chat. Also, I forgot to let everybody know at the end, we will read more questions. If you guys send us a super chat, we will absolutely read anything that you guys want to add, any sort of questions or stuff like that. But I'm going to read this one real quick because this goes on with Frith. The American asks, it seems that Frith implies a heavy sense of duty. Are there instances we have where people did things they didn't want in order to maintain Frith? And if they didn't, what were the consequences?
Right. There is actually a lot of saga references to people who had arguments amongst the family about what they wanted to do to a different situation. Different people within the family could argue with each other, could disagree. But it was always to be understood that once it got taken into the realm of action, the family could only do one thing. The body cannot act against itself. I actually don't understand, or I don't know if there are any examples of our ancestors breaking Frith in such an open and willing manner. It was almost unthinkable to them. Yeah. It's just part of their worldview that this just did not happen.
Yeah. And he also asks, what are the consequences if you break Frith?
Well, as I said, it's really just something that our ancestors almost couldn't even imagine. I mean, there are references to someone who was once a great king who was once tried to bribe to act against his brother. And his response to being bribed was, you cannot be serious.
Yeah. Or you get bogged. That's probably
why. Yes. I mean, at that point, it might actually become such a great spiritual crime that it's almost like a deed of impropriety, a stain upon the family.
Yeah. And Jamie says, our boy Jamie Martin says, Frith cannot be implemented. It is a phenomenon. It can only be recognized and warded. What do you think about that?
I think that's right, actually. We should remember that Frith exists as a metaphysical concept. We don't build it. We don't construct it. It simply is a thing that exists. We can only recognize that it is already here amongst us.
Yeah, that's some big brain stuff. All right, Mr. Tristan, we are coming up on halftime, and you know what that means? That means we get to hear a little word from our boy, the Folkish Farmer, our colleague over at Neurona Society. He's gonna
absolutely.
Show us
he has some delicious stuff for us.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And he put this together just for us, for the bog, and he wants to he really wants to get out the idea of kind of opting out of going to the grocery store, buying processed crap and stuff. You guys all saw the episode. Really, really brilliant guy, and really, really has his heart in this stuff. And he does a lot of really great work. And he works over in Neurona Society in the diet circle and the combat circle. He's all over the place. He's awesome, awesome guy, really brilliant guy. And he's a really good cook. He's a darn good cook, and this is coming from somebody that, you know, I think I'm a pretty good cook too. So when he's got some skills, and he's shown us stuff that can not only like bring our cooking game up, and use ancestral ingredients, and bring us back to our primordial form, but also save us a little bit of money and help us get into better physical shape with some nutrition and stuff like that. So without further ado, we're gonna look at a little. Short video recipe for bone broth from our boy Folkish Farmer. Much love, man.
kitchen of the Volkish farmer. Today we're going to make some bone broth, and this is something that's super important to add to your diet. It's rich in a lot of vitamins and minerals, collagen, as well as some protein. And to make bone broth, it's pretty simple. What you want to do is obviously start with bones. These are lamb bones. You can use beef bones, chicken bones, fish bones. Really doesn't matter, even duck bones. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to slice up some onions, some celery and carrots, and some garlic. And that's actually what's in this bowl here. So I'm going to add this into the stock pot here. And I'll add my pre-cut into the stock pot as well. Now what I'm going to do is I'm going to add some pepper, and this is to taste. I like a lot of pepper. I like spicier food, so I'll add a little bit more. We're going to add a little bit of oregano, maybe about maybe a teaspoon of oregano. As you can see, I don't measure very often, unless it's with baking. You do need to measure, but with cooking, don't really need to. This is thyme. I'm going to add about a teaspoon of thyme in there as well. And then I'm going to add me two bay leaves. Let's put my two bay leaves in there. And then I'm going to add some salt. Now at this point, what I'm going to do is I'm going to add water. I'm going to add it up right here to the top line of this. I'm going to cover this, and I'm going to simmer this for approximately a day and a half on a very low setting. So on most stoves, that's going to be a 1. Occasionally, that may be a 2. Just depends on your stove. You don't want it to actually boil. What you want it to just slowly cook down. That's going to release the marrow. That's going to release all the good nutrients from the bones. And these vegetables will be non-existent probably by tomorrow morning. So I did want to read a small passage to you guys about broths and about bone broth. And this comes from Grimm's Teutonic Mythology. So, as it was in primitive and widespread customs at banquet to set aside a part of the food for the household gods, and particularly to place a dish of broth before Bertha and Hulda, the gods were also invited to share in the festive drink. So, as you can see, broth was very important to our ancestors. It was also left as an offering to the gods. So I'm going to go ahead and put some water in this, fill this up, and get this simmering. And just wanted to give a quick little shout out to Hannah at Traditional Apothecaries. Some nice beard oil going here. So if you guys haven't checked them out, definitely check them out. Really good, high quality product. Very pleased with my order. Definitely check them out. And thanks everyone, and I'll see you soon. So just wanted to show you guys what the bone broth looks like at this point. So this has been cooking down for about 24 hours. I'll go ahead and get a spoon here and stir it up a little bit. And you can see most of the vegetables are pretty much gone. The carrots are a little bit there, but as far as the garlic and the onions, it's pretty much all mixed in there. And that's really good. So what I'm going to do with this broth is I'm going to use this to make some beef stew, some venison dishes as well, and then I'll use some of the leftovers for rice or to flavor other dishes. So this is what your broth should look like after cooking down for about 24 hours. Like I said before, if you're using beef bones, you probably want to cook it down for 2 days. If you're using pretty much anything else, a day. So here you go. Enjoy.
Oh, very, very cool. Press 9 in the chat to hail Folkish Farmer. I love that guy. Man, what really great stuff. Let me tell you guys something about the bone broth. I made some bone broth after Thanksgiving. I took the turkey, the carcass from the turkey, and I threw it into a pot with some water, and I cooked it down. I boiled it all, overnight. I boiled it overnight, and then I strained it out, and then I froze it. And I brought it out like a couple weeks later the other day, and we made some soup out of it, out of the turkey bone broth. And let me tell you guys something.
What a robust, delicious flavor. It was off the charts. Wonderful. I put dumplings in it, man. It was so good. So good. You're never going to have a more robust, delicious broth than if you make the bone broth like that. And somebody said about the where do you get bones from? Man, if you're not hunting your animal, buy your meat that still has the bones in it. Like, for example, with a chicken, instead of just buying, like, separated chicken breast, buy the whole chicken. It's cheaper. Separate it yourself. You can watch a video on YouTube how to separate it. Save the bones. Cook them down. And let me tell you guys, so you know when you cut an onion when you're cooking at home? Save the onion ends. Throw the onion ends in there. Throw, you know, celery leaves in there. Whatever you have left over from your vegetables and everything that you would normally throw out, throw it in there and just let it all cook down. I guarantee you it is going to be absolutely delicious, and the nutrition level in it is off the charts.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, my family actually did the exact same thing yours did, Dave. I can testify to the quality of the soup.
Oh, yeah. The bone, it's off the chain, man. It's absolutely delicious. So, Mr. BJ says that's stock. Yeah, it's stock. It's bone broth. So, let's get moving on here. The next topic is another really foundational, pivotal principle and our faith and stuff, and that is luck. Tristan, tell us what luck is and how it differs from our understanding of luck, which is kind of like just like roll the dice, kind of chance thing. It's not like that.
Right. I have here another quote from the Culture of the Teutons, which I'll read for everyone. Besides honor, man needs something which in the ancient language is called luck. Our translation, however, which draws the sense of chance into the foreground, fails altogether to indicate the true force of the word. The associations of the modern term, stressing the sense of chance or fortune, all run counter to the spirit of ancient culture, and there is no other way of reaching a full understanding than by patient and unprejudiced reconstruction of Teutonic psychology. Whichever way we turn, we find the power of luck. It determines all progress. Where it fails, life sickens. It seems to be the strongest power, the vital principle indeed of the world. And in the dramatic understanding, luck, which can also be called the force of Haminya, it's not, as Dave mentioned, random chance or an impersonal force that penetrates the universe. It has to be properly understood as the result of the clan soul, one's the clan wellspring, your metaphysical sense of your own group upon the face of the world and reality itself. We have examples here of this luck in action and different types of luck, how our ancestors understood it. When a man's field yielded rich harvests, when his lands were rarely visited by frost or drought, he was said to be Arsel, i.e. he was possessed the luck of fertility. When his cattle throve and multiplied, always returning sale and undepleted from their summer saving ground, grazing grounds, then he was called Faisal. He had the luck of cattle. Other men had as their dominant attribute luck of battle. When professional warriors like Armiat Gelini seek to express their faith in a few words, they can find nothing to say but that they trust in their strength and their Sigurseli, their gift of victory.
Gelini, that doesn't sound like a Germanic name. That sounds like a pasta company or something.
Well, I don't know here. I don't actually know what that means. I'm not familiar with the person, yeah. But we might have to look that up.
Gelini, I heard you got luck in battle. Hey, what do you forget about it?
Right, forget about it.
Forget about it. So, yeah, luck is something it's really more about like a metaphysical reputation. Would you say that?
Oh, absolutely. It has to do with it's almost like your soul's personality, its ability to affect the reality around you. And as different clans and different families have a different soul, and it has different attributes. Some are stronger in some areas, some are weaker in some areas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And what goes into procuring or improving or even damaging your luck?
Mostly it has to do with great deeds accumulated over centuries by a clan, or in the marriages to people of also great clans who have very powerful luck. People would often try to marry the daughters or sons of kings in order to try to take some of their luck and bring them into their family.
Yeah, I believe you actually have a quote here that talks about a king's luck, right? It says, the most violent attacks of nature, too, fell scatheless upon the king's luck. Kings never drown, said William Rufus when he put out into the channel in a boat during a gale. To quell a revolt in Normandy on its first outbreak, Olaf the Saint, on his crossing to Norway, was in great danger during a storm. But the good men with him and his own luck brought him unscathed to land.
Oh, absolutely. We have to understand in the Germanic context that the king was a position of sacral importance, that they were the king because of the great power of their hominia. Their luck could encompass and embody to penetrate all of the people in their kingdom. It could create fertility and create luck in battle and create great weather and conditions for all the things you would need to rule a kingdom, and that the only person who could do that were the members of this kingly lineage, which is why they were so important.
Yeah, and I believe we mentioned in a previous podcast about a specific king in a certain region that was buried in a burial mound, and people would go and, you know, give offerings to him.
Right. You're talking about Olaf Gerstadolf. He was of the Yngling dynasty, which is a great sacral kingship descended from the god Freyr.
Yeah. Yeah, Frey, like Yngve Frey. A lot of people don't realize that Freyr just means lord, and his real name is Yng,
right,
like the rune Yngwas.
Yeah, absolutely, because Yngwas is exactly what he was associated with. It's fertility and luck. I mean, Hamingja is a very central thing to Freyr, actually, as I've mentioned before in various streams.
Yeah. And speaking of the Yngling line, I recently just realized this. Up here in PA, we have a type of beer called Yngling Lager. And if you go anywhere in Pennsylvania and you ask for a lager, they're going to bring you a Yngling. Well, Yngling is a variation of Yngling. So if you come to PA and you get a lager, you're drinking the Lord's beer.
You know, it's very interesting that we always see these sort of buried folk memories reassert themselves in the modern age, don't we?
Yeah, absolutely. And Yngling beer, quick story about Yngling beer. During Prohibition, like obviously everything was shut down. Yngling Lager is America's oldest brewery. It was established in 18 something. It's like the oldest one, and it's here in PA in Pottsville, Pennsylvania. And during Prohibition, obviously they had to shut down. Well, when you know they I don't know how true the story is, but this is how the story goes. People probably Google it and see what the truth is behind it. But apparently, Yngling Lager, after Prohibition was up, they had a truck full of beer waiting at the White House after it was over to give like the president and stuff beer after it was signed off, which means that they were brewing the whole time, you know, and they didn't get in any trouble. They're just like, oh, wow, this just materialized out of nowhere.
Well, you know, that was always the funny thing with Prohibition era alcohol and whatnot. They'd sell all the materials and then tell you, don't mix this with 2 quarts of water and put it on the stove for 4 hours while stirring, because that will produce an illegal beverage.
Yeah, that's craziness. So back to luck. Luck is a really important thing, and it's something, it's like, you know, it's like people say, oh, you got bad mojo or whatever. And as Mr. Tristan said, it's something that permeates through transgenerationalism. Like it's a transgenerational thing. Like everything we understand in the Germanic worldview is transgenerational. If your great 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 grandfather and his son and their son were all scumbags and like did some evil stuff, that's gonna follow into the lineage until some great deeds are performed or somebody marries into a family that has better luck. And the reason that it's kind of like called luck and it kind of turns it is because it is like the positive force that can change the outcome of certain situations in reality.
Now, there's actually a recorded example of one person who had very terrible luck in trading. Every time you try to build up a shipment and send it out, it would sink or get taken by pirates or something of that sort. And it was such a problem for him that people were making fun of him. And he had the brilliant idea of partnering with the king at that point. And His reasoning was that, of course, the king's luck was so powerful that it would overpower his own, and all of his ventures, therefore, would benefit from the king's luck and come into his because of the oath. It's, as we talked about Frith, oaths and relationships are very metaphysically potent in the Germanic faith. They do actually have real meaning. But he was successful in his ventures ever since after partnering with the king. None of his cargoes were ever lost in weather. None of them were ever taken by pirates. And as this was, it was shown one of the great benefits of the king's luck and what he can, his own sense, his own Hamingja can do for the people.
So what are people, like those of us out there that say that, that believe that we have maybe bad luck, what can people do to improve it?
You can improve it by trying to associate more with people, go into formal covenants with people who you know have very strong luck, people who whose luck might be able to overpower the badness in your own, and hopefully it would almost cleanse you and cleanse your generational tent there and strengthen it for the future.
Yeah, and there's something in 48 Laws of Power about associating with people that have, you know, good luck or something like that. But it's, that's, you know, it's absolutely true. You know, I mean, and this is just common knowledge stuff that if you surround yourself with successful people, you become successful. If you surround yourself with wealthy people, you become wealthy. Not only just because you develop their skills and you learn from them and stuff like that, and you have better opportunities, but because their aura rubs off on you, and it becomes something that you can give to your kids as well. Would you say that would be an accurate understanding of it?
Oh, absolutely. And I think because it's such a metaphysical potent thing here that even people who are not of the faith have realized and recognized that this keeps happening, and they seek to explain it in some sense. We simply have a more religious explanation, I would call it a more proper explanation of exactly what's going on.
Yeah. Here's the thing with, I explain to people say, well, if I'm not of that religion, does that still, it doesn't matter. These are universal principles. You know, these are things that everybody has. You know, I mean, it doesn't matter if you go and you bloat to Odin and you're part of a kindred or a clan, or you're part of the AFA or the Nirona Society or Dinnick Rite, or it doesn't matter. You could be just a nobody. You could be a complete atheist. It doesn't matter whether or not you recognize these things or not. It still applies to you. It's like gravity. You can say, well, I don't believe in gravity. If you jump off a bridge, you're going to fall and you're going to die. You know, it's the same thing with luck. It's the same thing with, and, you know, Frith is another thing. It's the same thing with the existence of the gods themselves. You know, I mean, you can say that the gods aren't real all day long. You can say, you make euhemerist claims that they were ancestor. The bottom line is the gods are real, and our ancestors have worshipped them for thousands of years. And, you know, whether you recognize them or not or believe in them or not, they're still there. You know, it's, you know, the same thing with, like, Urlog and Weird and, like, all these principles that we talk about. You can't escape them. There's no escaping. They apply to you because they apply to everybody. Just like gravity, there's, like, inertia, just like, other science stuff. You know what I mean? It's all stuff that just exists. We just define it.
Yeah, you know, it's worth mentioning that because Frith and all these obligations have to do with ancestral ties, we have Frith with the gods because we have a relation to them that's deeper than an ideology. It's blood and it's bone. Our ancestors didn't believe that you could simply decide you were going to be something else. And I mean, they did very much believe that after, if someone, like, you know, someone in their village converted to Christianity, that they were still going to face the Helting and the judgment of the gods.
Yeah.
We have here in the Håkonarmal, which is the poem at the death of King Håkon of Norway, who was famously a Christian much before the actual conversion actually happened. And it's recorded here. Fresh from the battlefield came in, dripping with blood, the Norseman's king. Methinks, said he, great Odin's will is harsh and bodes me further ill. Thy son from off the field today, from victory to snatch away. But Odin said, be thine the joy, Valhall gives my own brave boy. And this is a very potent idea here, because he's saying that even though Håkon expected that when he died he was going to face Odin's harsh judgment because he was a Christian, that Odin didn't care what he believed. He still said, well, you're a great warrior, you're my own son, So you're going to receive the same benefit as everyone else. And that goes to show that people in our faith, you can't simply say, well, I don't believe that. I mean, it still does apply to them very much so. You can't erase the ties of blood and ancestry.
No, just what it is. It's an inheritance. Yeah, this was
something... Oh, it is absolutely an inheritance.
So
we could say it's an Othala.
Yeah, exactly. I speak on the Othala all the time. Yeah, the Othala, which is your transgenerational inheritance. It could be, and the Othala could be anything. It could be what we're talking about here with luck. It could be the Ossetru faith, the Seti and Ossetru faith. Germanic tradition. It could be land. It could be a custom. It could be knowing how to make bone broth. You know what I mean? It could be absolutely anything. You know, that's what the Othala is, and that's something that's been taken away from us. You know, Roy mentioned speaking of subversion and things being taken from us. Roy in the chat says that entire concept of luck has been so subverted in our time. For instance, so many people would call things bad luck that are actually beneficial for them, and vice versa, material things.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we see in the modern day such a corruption of some of the very basic principles that our ancestors took for granted or that they valued.
Exactly. So you go up to... anybody that it like looks like us, anybody that is of the same ancestry, and you talk to them about luck, they're going to think about going to the casino and playing blackjack. You know what I mean? They're going to think about when they roll the dice. They're going to think about just a very materialist understanding of what luck is.
Right. It's almost a very profane, like superstitious understanding of luck, whereas we could know much more properly of its metaphysical importance, of how it functions as almost like a science.
Now, say you do have proper luck in the Germanic sense, in the proper sense. Would that possibly translate to the material luck as well? Like, say you have great luck in your family. Would that help you win at the casino?
Oh, it definitely could. People with very strong luck always reap great benefit.
All right.
For instance, we recognize that Leif Erikson, the famous explorer, was called Leif the Lucky, and this refers to his strong haminya in exploring.
Yeah, he got blown off course and ended up in the Americas.
Exactly.
Yeah, when he should have just crashed and, whatever. But, how often do people back then get blown off course when they're out there sailing the seas and end up somewhere and survive? Not very often, especially when their expedition ends up being twice as long as it's supposed to be.
Yeah, we can see here the principle of the Germanic concept of luck in action, that it almost includes the idea of just random occurrences that always seem to go your way, except in the Germanic understanding, it's not random chance. It's not the, has no meaning to it or anything. It does have meaning. It's the power of our metaphysics, of our soul, influencing reality towards our benefit, to bend it towards us.
Yeah, absolutely. And, one of the gods in the Eddas that's mentioned, Ullr, who's actually much more prominent among the Alpine tradition. We were actually talking about doing a show on him, but a lot of people associate him with luck. And they associate him with luck because all the luck and games and the hunt and like stuff like that, like that's a very material understanding. But it's a much deeper thing than that. I actually did a video talking about Ullr and the god of the hunt. And actually what the Alpine people called him was the Jägermeister, the master of the hunt. And that's, obviously like the alcohol. The alcohol is named after him. And it really comes back to having, I forget the word that you used, but there's a word about being able to come up with food, like having luck with cattle or having luck with this stuff. Ullr has such great luck and such great prominence that he is able to hunt animals and provide food. And when people would pray to him for luck in the hunt, they weren't praying to roll the dice. They eventually come across an animal to shoot and kill and eat. It was they were praying to Ullr to kind of have that that great familial transgenerational prominence, that aura, so they could go out and they could have luck with sustenance.
Oh, absolutely. As we see, a hunter would have to rely upon his own luck very often. So we can see that someone who would be in the process of worshipping Ullr would obviously have a lot to do with luck. And we see this a lot in Sweden, especially, because Sweden was controlled largely by a Freyr-centric cult, as he was the national deity of the kingly line as well. We see a lot of this concern with the very tenets of Hamingja, of luck, much more in other areas, especially in some southern Norway or in Denmark, in which they were much more Odinic. They didn't seem to have as much of a concern with it, though it was still very prominent.
Yeah, absolutely. Somebody mentions in the chat, I want to, I know we were supposed to be putting something to the side for doing questions at the end, but people are saying a lot of good stuff, and I want to address it here. Nina asks, is luck something similar to predestination then? No. No.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's very similar to predestination, though it is worth mentioning that the Germanic concept of fate is inherently deterministic. So that is a thing. So, but I don't think it has anything to do with luck itself.
No. But so predestination is different than determinism and even different than fatalism. So predestination is the idea that before you're even born, and predestination is strictly a Christian idea. Yeah, it's that the main God, the Christian God, writes out your life and whether you're saved or damned before you're even born. That's what predestination is. What in the Germanic worldview, and actually, in reality, in fact, we can get into the scientific stuff. We could do a whole show about this, so I don't want to go too far into it. But what we understand, not just what we believe, what we know to be true, is determinism. Determinism is the reality, and this is on many different levels. But it's not like predestination, how it's all written out whether you're saved or damned before you're born, which is, in my opinion, a ridiculous idea. It's that the web of weird ties all things together, and the kind of like the momentum and the actions and the decisions of everybody and everything around them and the great cosmic events and everything ties into this great web, which kind of gives you a determined outcome or several determined outcomes from everything that happens in your life. Picture it like this, and I actually write this in my article of the Epicist magazine, which is going to be coming out in the next few days, that I describe determinism. Don't think of it like you have to walk down a hallway and like that's it, like it's a completely linear thing. Think of it like this. Think about it like it's a fun house, like a carnival fun house, where you walk in and there's many different doors, and you can choose whatever door you want, and you can go down different hallways, you do stuff. However, all of the hallways are within the confines of the wall of the fun house. And you can't get out of the funhouse itself, but you can take different routes. And then that funhouse, the schematics and the plans and the floor plans were already written by somebody, by the carpenters, and then that was put up by them. And that so determinism is like is more nuanced, and it's different than predestination.
Well, to talk about some of this determinism here, philosophically speaking, I take the position of compatibilism, which is the idea that free will and determinism are mutually compatible. They can go together, which is, blows the minds of some folks. The idea being that your freedom to act in any given situation could be closed or present for reasons that have nothing to do with metaphysics. We are all bound by our nature. The things we want to do are the things that we will end up doing, effectively.
That's an interesting. So you're saying so, but pretty much what you're saying is free will is an illusion. What you're saying is that what you want, what you think you want, is already determined.
More or less, we are all bound by our nature, and that decides what we want, how we view the world. But our nature is not inherently the same thing as the deterministic model of reality. So they are related. They interchange there, but they are separate, and it's important to make the philosophical distinction there.
Yeah, man, we could do. Yeah, this is gonna spark up a debate that's gonna go on a whole other hour. But
we have to save this one for a different episode.
Well, we could do. Me and Tristan could talk like determinism and stuff is something that is it's something that we like to talk about a lot, and it's something that's really really apparent, and it's a big topic among the Asatru path and Seti path and stuff like that.
All right, we have a lot of people who have very strong opinions on a lot of different beliefs there.
Yeah. George says free will is essentially not a thing. All right, we got a super chat from our boy Roy. $20. Thank you very much, sir. Many blessings to you. Greatly appreciate your donation. It says, this is such a fantastic discussion tonight. Oh, my God. Thank you so much, sir.
Oh, absolutely. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you so, so
we
much.
We definitely always try to give everyone a really good discussion here.
Yeah. That's because, you know, that's what when I first started the Bog, I was like, you know, I've been doing I've done a lot of comedy stuff. I've done a lot of political stuff. And I wanted to really focus in on kind of like the deep dive into my faith, because that's what I got the most questions about. I'd be on like talking about whatever's in the news. And people are like, what's cyclical time about? How do we bloat? And I'm like, dude, that has nothing to do with what's in the news. So I ended up just talking about it anyway. So I was like, let's do a deep dive. And I ran the Bog, and then I got Brother Angriff on. He was such a great co-host. And now I got Mr. Tristan. And I'm like, with my co-host, I'm going to just throw this out here. I'm like the Green Bay Packers. It's like I had Brett Favre, and then now I have Aaron Rodgers. It's like I just can't stop I can't stop winning, man. I just can't lose. Anyway, thank you again, Mr. or Mrs. Roy Danton. Greatly appreciate your donation. If anybody else has anything else they'd like to throw it in now, because we are coming to the end of the hour. Mr. Tristan, do you have anything in conclusion for us?
No, I think I actually said most of what I wanted to get out here. Though, you know what? I do want to say something. We didn't get into it with the concept of Frith here, but I wanted to note some linguistic interesting things here. That Frith is directly related to the word friend, which is cognate to the Norse word frendi. A frendi in the Norse understanding doesn't mean friend as in like someone we like. It means a kinsman, and it derives from the word flia, to love. So we can see here that in the Germanic understanding, Frith, friend, a kinsman, friendy, and to love, Freya, are all extremely related concepts. They almost bounce between one another as like a grammatical uses of the same word.
That's really fascinating and awesome, and actually not surprising at all.
No, it's absolutely not surprising.
Makes perfect sense. And the American says, Dave has good luck with co-hosts. I'll tell you what, I have more than good luck with co-hosts. I have great luck with friends. I can't begin to tell you how grateful and blessed I am to have so many great friends, man. I mean, you guys get into my chats or come hang out at my events and stuff like that. I'm just surrounded with great people, the best people. I get to rub shoulders. You know, between Neurona Society and my friends in the chats that are across the country, you know, my AFA brothers and sisters, you know, all you guys in the chat, man. Like, man, I always say this, like, I've always been so blessed to have such a great audience. And I don't really consider them my audience. I consider them kind of like my yeah, this is Dave's Hall, and they're like my friends coming in, like my tribe. You know, because I always get so many wonderful blessings and kind words and, you know, gifts, and like it's just awesome. It's just what a wonderful experience, you know, doing this stuff. And I can't give you guys enough thanks for you guys tuning in, supporting us here in the Bog, and supporting me through the years. And much endless love to all you guys, and endless blessings, man. But we are going to shut it down for this evening, but I do want to let you guys know we have a special episode that's going to be airing in the middle of the week. I don't know if it's going to be on Monday night or Tuesday night or whatever. We're bringing on the mighty Jack Young, fitness expert. He's from he's a Brit Bong guy, British guy from the UK. Man, the guy is absolutely brilliant, really brilliant. He's just like a just an expert when it comes to fitness. Where do you see this guy? He looks like he could, like,
oh yeah, the man is ripped like the Hulk.
Yeah, he's I wouldn't want to tangle with him. You know what I mean? I'm not a wuss. Like, I'm a kind of guy that I could throw down, but if I could choose between this guy and another guy, I wouldn't, because he could, like, rip your arms off your body. He's a freak. But he's also a really, really cool guy, and he's of the faith as well. And you know, he's going to be coming on with us, but he's over in Europe, so he's got different hours than us. So we're going to do it earlier in the day. I don't know if we're going to play it live then, or if I'm going to record it and we're going to do it. We're going to premiere it later. But he's going to give us. It's going to be about the metaphysics of strength. He's going to get in. He's going to start out. We're going to talk about like some tips and stuff to get out working out and stuff like that. And then we're going to get into some of the metaphysics and deep spiritual stuff that comes with being strong. And also your boy Big Dave is going to, because he's a fitness coach and everything. So your boy Big Dave is going to be taking the Jack Young fitness course. And, yeah, maybe I should do it after the holidays. But yeah, we're gonna go with it, and your boy Big Dave is gonna see what Mr. Jack Young has to offer. But he's gonna be coming on. You guys are really, really gonna like him. And I believe we have another segment next week from our boy Folkish Farmer from the Diet Circle. He's got all kinds of stuff coming. We got more stuff coming out in Neurona Society. More segments that we're gonna play. Man, the bog is like really popping off. Man, this is like next level stuff that we're coming out. And like I said, that like it's not just me and Tristan here. Behind us is just like an entire crew of geniuses. Like we are surrounded with just brilliant, awesome, good-hearted, wonderful people. And you know, speaking of wonderful people, man, many thanks to you guys. Yeah, thanks again to everybody that contributed to the chat, to the donations, everything, man. So we're gonna close it out for the night. I want to make sure everybody clicks like, subscribe, share, click the little alert bell so you can alert every time we go live here on The Bog, which is every single Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern. So much great stuff coming. We got a Santa Claus episode coming up. You guys are gonna love that. We might have a treat for you guys. We might have a very special guest to come on and talk about old Santa with us. You know, yeah, all that stuff. So press 9 in the chat to hail The Bog. And I will see you guys next week. But before we shut down, I want to give a special shout out to my homegirl, like always, Miss Hannah, Traditional Apothecary. You guys know the shtick. Stop giving your money to the multinational globalist vampires that want to destroy you. Literally, that's what they are. They hate your guts. Look at the propaganda that they put out about you, man. Like, they literally hate you. They sell you poison, trashes your hair, trashes your body, trashes your skin. Give your money to somebody that loves you and makes an awesome organic product. Man, let me tell you, this is such great stuff. So keep your white bright, keep your beard robust, and keep your mane flowing just like Big Dave. Go to traditionalapothecary.bigcartel.com. Promo code Dave to get 10% off. And I will see you guys next week. Hail the gods. Hail the folk. And see you guys next time. Hail.